When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, David Perron gets 6 games for cross-checking. Too much?
Clash of the Connors coming up with Bedard versus McDavid. We've got Chicago team site editor Matt Carlson to fill us in.
And John Tavares was booed once again in Long Island. We're going to talk to Stefan Rosner, team site editor for the New York Islanders, about why this is still happening.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
And I'm Michael Trikos. This is the Hockey News pregame show, brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. Welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. Ryan, let's get right into this. The Department of Player Safety, very busy this week.
Indeed.
So, David Perron gets 6 games for cross-checking Artem Zub in the head.
Yeah.
Shortly after, Eric Gabranson gets only 1 game for literally jumping Nick Cousins and just dumbing him on the ice.
Yeah.
Am I missing something here, or is there a bit of a disconnect in terms of one is worth 6 games, one is worth 1 game, but both of them look pretty ugly?
They definitely did. For me, if we're starting with Perron, so you know Dylan Larkin gets knocked out on what I would deem to be a pretty unfortunate scenario where he gets shoved, cross-checked, whatever.
Like he was getting sandwiched. Like one guy got him from behind, and at the same time, someone came in from...
Yeah, so Matthew Joseph gets him from one side, and as he's falling from that contact, Parker Kelly, who is attempting to hit him as well, ends up getting Larkin in the head. Mm-hmm. Very scary situation for the Detroit Red Wings captain. Luckily, he was okay later. But in the aftermath of this, Perron sort of jump cross-checks Zub directly in the head. Yeah. And I wonder, I don't have any inside information on this, but the fact that, you know, he cross-checked a completely innocent bystander in the head.
What did Zub do?
Exactly. He was just standing there.
The poor guy.
Poor guy. Like, I don't know if, obviously, Perron, and, you know, these things happen fast. You talk to NHL players and they'll say, like, look, we don't get instant replay on the ice. We see one of our teammates lying prone and we react. But, you know, Perron clearly, there was 2 guys he could have gone after, and he didn't go after either of them. He went after the wrong guy, unfortunately. And, you know, this was not like, you know, there was the case with Austin Matthews and Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah, from a few years ago.
Yeah, where they were going after each other, and there was a cross-check to the head. Zub wasn't doing anything. And I think that's why, even though David Perron historically has been a very clean player in his career, you know, big-time veteran.
He plays hard, but he doesn't play necessarily dirty where he gets suspended.
Right, exactly. This is not Matt Cook we're talking about.
No.
This is David Perron, you know, a pretty well-respected guy who's, you know, done a lot in his career already. But because, you know, and I've heard people say if it wasn't David Perron, it's probably 10 games. But, you know, because...
You think so, huh?
I mean, potentially. Again, like, if this was somebody that... If this was Tom Wilson, for example...
Okay.
You know, somebody who has had a history of suspensions, then maybe the discipline's even worse. But for me, it's like, you can't cross-check a random guy in the head as, you know, as clean as your record might have been beforehand.
No, I'm with you. It looked awful. I think the hit on Larkin looked extremely awful, just seeing him lay on the ice, and I could see where Perron's coming from.
Yeah.
It's not just a teammate, it's your captain who's laying on the ice, and... You know, at the time, I was even thinking, I'm like, is Matthew Joseph or Parker Kelly, like, did they either get him with an illegal shot, maybe a punch to the face, it looked like? Now, after seeing it, like, as many times as we've seen the Zapruder film, I'm now of the belief that it was just unfortunate.
Just bad luck.
Got sandwiched and, you know, head going one way, then all of a sudden snapping the other way.
Yeah.
So six games for David Perron, initially it seems very severe, just for what you said. We've seen guys do so much worse. And I think this is going to raise the argument, and it already has, that the Department of Player Safety, they've got a wheel somewhere in that boardroom where they're spinning it going, okay, one game, two games, six games, or a $500,000 fine.
Right, right. And I'm hoping that, unfortunately for David Perron in this case, I'm hoping that they're trying to send more of a message this year when it comes to headshots in general, where it's like, okay, doesn't matter what your record was in the past, you know, if you target the head, we're going to come after you and there's going to be serious consequences. Because not only six games, it's like almost $150,000 that Perron will forfeit during that suspension. That's a big chunk of change. So I think what they're trying to do is send a message that, you know, on a player that, I mean, Zub was basically defenseless. He did not expect it to happen, that there will be consequences. So they've had that reputation of the wheel of justice before. Hopefully what they're trying to do is get away from that and say, look, like, you guys know what the score is here. Headshots are out. So if it happens, we're going to come after you.
Okay. So help me make sense of this then.
Okay.
Because Eric Gudbranson gets hit. You could argue whether he should have seen Nick Cousins coming or not. He was a little further away from the boards, took it on the numbers, goes into the boards pretty hard.
Yeah.
NHL wants to get rid of headshots.
Yep.
They want to get rid of guys getting hit in the head and defensive players. Yeah. Square with me here why Eric Gudbranson isn't getting more than one game.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask why Nick Cousins didn't get suspended.
Oh, okay. You think it should be that way.
Totally. Like a brutal hit from behind at high speed. Like, keep in mind, Eric Gudbranson is like, what, 6'4", 6'5", 230 pounds? Like, imagine the force to lay out Eric Gudbranson with a hit from behind. Like, it was unnecessary. And
you don't see it as the same thing that happened to Luke Hughes? Where John Tortorella is saying, hey, aren't guys used to getting hit? Or the Bruins not getting used to getting hit anymore?
It felt like Gudbranson was in a more vulnerable position than Hughes. I think Tortorella made a very good point about the Luke Hughes hit. But this one felt more malicious. Mm. You know, clearly Cousins wasn't going for the puck or anything like that. And again, you know, it's high speeds. Like, I don't know if Gudbranson had touched the puck yet or was still going after it. But it was clearly right on the numbers, and he kind of leapt into him from behind. I mean, you see that. I mean, Cousins himself kind of went flying.
Probably could have been a little worse, too.
It certainly could have been a terrible result. I wonder if Gudbranson only got one game because the NHL saw what happened to him. And, you know, Nick Cousins is definitely one of those players that plays closer to the line than David Perron does. I have no inside information on this, but I wonder if, you know, the guys in player safety saw what happened to Gudbranson and saw his reaction and were like, yeah, we probably would have done the same thing. We probably would have jumped Nick Cousins. And that's why he only got one game, because it was almost that retribution. Now, if you're a professional sports league, you probably don't want guys taking justice into their own hands.
No.
But I'm just trying to...
That was a one-sided fight, Ryan.
Well, Cousins turtled. Yeah, he was definitely not trying to fight back. I wonder if... You know, this is not the way you want to necessarily comport yourself as a professional league, where you're just like, yeah, you guys took care of it, so it's fine. But I wonder if that's what happened, where it's like, you're going to get what... We got to give you something, Eric. One game, you know, he forfeits about $20,000, but it's like, all of a sudden, if Florida, I don't know what the schedule looks like, but the next time Eric Gudbranson and Nick Cousins play, I'm tuning in.
Well, listen, we're second week of December here, December 12th. Games shouldn't matter so much right now where guys are just hammering the crap out of each other, right? Like, this is playoff-style hockey that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Does this kind of shed a light on just how tight the standings are? Granted, Columbus ain't going anywhere.
No.
But there is it just seems like that every game matters so much more right now in the NHL. I don't know if it's because so many, you know, playoff, where we deem playoff contenders or Stanley Cup contenders are falling down in the standings, but it just feels like this should be almost like the dog days of December. And we're seeing, like, the physical intensity just ramp up and up.
Certainly. And, you know, I think you make a good point there where There's teams like Toronto and Carolina that we thought would be a lot better. Mm-hmm. There are teams like Winnipeg and Vancouver that we didn't think would be as good as they've been so far, and Philadelphia as well. And we're going to talk
Central
about
division.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Islanders with Stefan later on in the show.
Right.
So there's kind of a weird parity outside of a couple of teams, and you know Edmonton got off to a horrible start, but they're going to get back into the playoff picture, so that bumps somebody else out, you know. And so it's a lot. It feels like it's a lot more competitive. Like unless you're kind of like San Jose, Chicago, you know, like even Ottawa has a bunch of games in hand, so it's like they're not out of it, even though they're pretty bad right now in terms of the record. So very well, it could be that most players in the NHL think they still have a chance, and you can't give up points.
No, it makes the NHL action all that much better, I gotta say.
It does.
So yeah. There you go.
We are now joined by Matt Carlson, our Chicago Blackhawks team site editor. And Matt, bit of an important game tonight. Connor Bedard, Connor McDavid. I guess to begin with, what's the hype around this matchup of two phenoms?
Well, I mean, we ask Bedard all the time about when it, you know, as a rookie, now you're going to see this famous player, or you're going to play against this famous player that you've been compared to. He was hyped for Crosby, and we've brought up some others like Ovechkin, whatever. Gives us a polite answer, but when we brought up Connor McDavid, he was genuinely excited. Got a story on it on the site with videos, and he lit up on that one, and basically called him, you know, the best player in the world. I don't think you'd have a whole lot of disagreement with that. And he really did seem to perk up on it. So it's going to be an interesting game tonight. Of course, Edmonton's playing quite well now since the coaching change, and the Blackhawks are, well, they're a rebuilding team. So we'll see how Bedard does against the Oilers, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of eyes on him.
I know everyone keeps trying to make that kind of, hey, they're both named Connor. Is there kind of some McDavid game into Bedard's game? I probably see more of Crosby in the kind of build that Bedard is, but you're looking at his points right now. The guy is on pace for something like 33 goals and 70 points at the end of this season if he continues at this pace. What have you made of, you know, Bedard's first couple months in the NHL?
He's an interesting player, as we all know, but if you really watch him all the time and you listen to what Luke Richardson tells us about him too, is I'll describe his style as he's playing it in the National Hockey League, because I didn't see much of him as a junior player beyond video and what have you. He's kind of a, you know, everybody knows he's slick. Everybody knows he's crafty. Everybody knows he's subtle. I'll describe him as being kind of slithery at this level. He's not, you know, but when he's at its best, he's persistent. He's pesky. He's annoying. He reads plays. He picks pockets. And as Richardson would say, is hard on the puck, not in a heavily physical sense, but in a persistent sense. And when he plays that way, he's really more fun to watch than people think. When he's pesky and going against the bigger guy and coming at him and forcing a turnover or forcing a mistake. And then once that puck comes free, there's not a whole lot of guys that are quicker physically or quicker mentally than he is. Although one thing that Luke Richardson has pointed out about him is he's tending to overanalyze plays a little bit. So there's a bit of a delay that he can't afford to have here in the National Hockey League that he could have gotten by with in junior hockey. So they want him to be a little more just up the instincts and be a little bit faster. But definitely, and the shot, of course, is what everybody has made of. It's very crafty, whippy stick, and a unique shot. He's shooting a lot. Which they want him to do from different places and sometimes not overhandle the puck or over-dish, although he had a great dish the other day against Washington in a cross-ice backhand pass that was lofted onto Connor Murphy's stick. But the game was already out of reach in that one. So, watch for Bedard to really be, when he's pesky, his best game so far, one in Tampa, when he had a multi-point game, and one in Florida when he had a multi-point game, came from being really pesky and reading things. He picked the pocket of Florida's Kevin Stenlund on a play that was just like, it just was over before it happened. He picked his pocket, whipped a shot off, and scored in about 2 seconds, in less than 2 seconds. So when Bedard is being pesky, being annoying, I think that's really the key for when he's best, at least at this point in his career in the National Hockey League.
Actually, you make a really good point there, because I know, you know, looking back at at the World Juniors and when he was with the Regina Pats, particularly in his draft year, Bedard was a lot more physical than I think a lot of people would have anticipated. And it's because he has that real fiery drive in him that he's going to do whatever it takes to win. And whether that's scoring a goal or, you know, just getting under the opponent's skin and making sure they know he's going to finish his checks, he's going to do it. Now, Matt, I wanted to ask you about another young gun in Chicago, another rookie, Kevin Korchinski. Could have gone to the World Juniors, but Chicago, very happy with how the teenager has already progressed. So he's going to stay with the Hawks. What have you seen from defenseman Kevin Korchinski?
Well, first of all, he's a great skater. He really can motor. He's a smooth skater. As he adjusts to this level, a few more hockey stops and less gliding through things. But, of course, he's not the first young player to have to go through that as he moves up a level from whatever level to whatever level. And but his wheels are great, and the Blackhawks want him to use his wheels. Does he make some mistakes? Little, what would appear to be little mistakes become, of course, bigger mistakes in the National Hockey League just because of the time, the quickness involved. He's not like throwing the puck away blatantly or anything like that, but just being a little quicker on things, quicker pass, just reading things a little bit better. But he's learning, and the Blackhawks have said that he will benefit most by being here in the National Hockey League. As you guys know, he's 19, so he cannot be sent down to minor pro hockey. The Blackhawks have basically said in the big picture for the season that he will benefit by being a pro this season, which means he has to be a Chicago Blackhawk and not a Rockford IceHawk, their minor league team. And they don't want to disrupt his season and send him to the world, or allow him to go to the World Juniors. Not saying allow him to go, but prefer that he not go to the World Juniors. And I think he's progressed a great deal here and has played some really great plays as well. So I think the other day he had a great play coming in over the line on the right wing side, went right past this forward who was standing still at the blue line, deep in the zone, cuts to the net, cuts across, doesn't score on the play, but went right through the crease. And those are the kind of plays I think you're going to expect to see from him. And and I'm sure as he progresses, you'll see him as a guy that can maybe skate the puck out of trouble in a lot of situations, deep in his own zone as well. So he's got the wheels, he's got the skills. He's still only 19, and he's still got to fill out. So he's only going to get better. And they basically said he will get – best way for him to get better is to remain in the National Hockey League this season.
Well, another reason I figure he might be in Chicago too, Matt, is, you know, Korchinski's 19, Bedard's 18. There's a guy there that he played with at the World Juniors, mm-hmm. close to his age. We know what happened with Taylor Hall in terms of the injury. He's no longer there. Corey Perry, obviously no longer with the team. I wonder about, you know, all this losing, what it's going to have on Connor Bedard's kind of psyche. So maybe having, you know, partner in arms or, you know, comrade there, it might help him. And, you know, like, what do you foresee in terms of the challenges going forward with this Blackhawks team? Because it doesn't look like they're going to be anywhere close to a playoff spot, obviously. But, is there sort of a concern that this season could be a kind of a long one for both young guys?
Well, I think the two teenagers, Korchinski and Bedard, keep each other entertained after practices. They're still out on the ice while we're waiting for them. So the two guys are out. The two teenagers are out still playing shinny, and they come up with different varieties of ways of playing two-man or shinny. They have dummies out there and all kinds of things. So they get their ice time. So for kids that might be watching this show that realize how expensive ice time is, these guys are teenagers getting it for free, and they're making the most of it and having fun. So I think they're having some fun doing that. But to the picture, the point about the team, it's not going. It would be pretty wild if the Blackhawks find themselves in a couple of months in a position to be challenging for a playoff spot. They are a rebuilding team. We've been told that by Kyle Davidson and by Luke Richardson. And indeed, they are a rebuilding team. They're getting good goaltending, though, which is interesting. And if they could stay competitive and just sort of like be engaged in games, I think that will probably be a good platform for some of the younger players. I think they've been told this is a process, and so long as the place doesn't self-destruct, I think they're going to be fine. And you know, they're coming through this Perry situation, which was a bit of a distraction for them. So we'll see how they stabilize after this.
Excellent. Well, Matt, thank you so much for our time. Really appreciate it.
Ryan, this is a headline that Edmonton Oilers fans do not want to hear. Philip Broberg, a first-round pick, reportedly wants out, wants a trade, hasn't been developed properly. You know, this screams of another guy, Jesse Puljujärvi, wanting out of Edmonton. And if you're Ken Holland and company, you need all the defense help that you can get. You don't want another guy kind of going out the door. What do you think this means for the Edmonton Oilers, and what do you think this means for Philip Broberg right now?
It's pretty tough because, I mean, Edmonton is playing incredibly right now. They're working their way back up the standings. You know, they're finally hot and sort of the team that we expected coming into the year. But Broberg should be an asset that is helping them out. I think what's really interesting about him is, you know, I mean, I've been following him since he was a draft prospect, and he's got great size, got mobility. You know, we saw some offense from him early on, but then we saw, I think, you know, particularly at the World Juniors, he could be a shutdown guy. So it's nice to have, you know, those options that you could help him develop. And it just really hasn't taken hold yet. And it's really too bad because, you know, I mean, we were looking before the show of how Edmonton has drafted recently. And, you know, there have been some sort of, you know, were they misses with, you know, Puljujärvi, you know, Dylan Holloway is still trying to find himself in terms of, you know, what he could be, you know, still a young guy, but I think we expected more, at least at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, Evan Bouchard's turned out pretty well. You know, Kyler Yamamoto, you know, he's gone, but part of that was cap-related.
He was 22nd overall.
Yeah, and at that point, you know, that was a pretty solid guy.
Yeah.
But it does kind of beg the question, is Edmonton getting the development that they need for their prospects? Are too many guys underwhelming? Like, where's the disconnect? And for Broberg, still a very young guy, still a lot of hockey in front of him, maybe a change of scenery is what he needs. And if you're Edmonton, you say, well, okay, well, in that case, we need something back because, you know, they should still have Stanley Cup expectations even after that horrid start.
Well, Broberg was an 8th overall pick, and I think any time you get a top 10 pick, you expect those guys to be NHLers, maybe impact players also. Mm. I'm also of the thinking here, Ken Holland came from Detroit where, you know, you got drafted in 2019, you're probably not going to see any ice time to maybe 2029. Like, yeah. I'm joking a bit, but, yeah. You know, I think Ken Holland's like, hey, we're not ready for you yet, or you're not ready. You almost have to be knocking down the door for totally. Ken Holland to be like, yeah, okay, you've got a spot. Mm. Interesting, though, with Broberg, the guy who went right after him, Trevor Zegras.
Yes.
Same draft. Matthew Boldy went a couple spots after that.
Yep.
Spencer Knight. That's the one.
Yeah, what would the Oilers be like if they had Spencer Knight?
Yeah, solves a lot of problems. Then again, maybe Spencer Knight is asking out because he'd be in the minors right now.
Or maybe Spencer Knight doesn't become Spencer Knight in Edmonton versus in Florida where, you know, in particular, you've got Roberto Luongo, you've got, you know, a whole goaltending, like, department that they work on, you know, at the AHL level, at the NHL level. I mean, the Panthers have set up something pretty nice down there, yeah. Which I think a lot of teams are sort of catching on to now. They did draft Stuart Skinner at Edmonton. And, you know, I mean, in the playoffs last year or in the run-up to the playoffs, he was pretty good. Obviously, this year it's been more up and down. I think he's playing a little better now. But it's one of those things where, you know, the team is hot, so you can't complain too much. But you do kind of wonder how much better would Edmonton have been if either Broberg had developed quicker or they had recognized that he would need more time and they had brought somebody else in the interim.
Another team facing another kind of similar problem is the Seattle Kraken. Shane Wright still hasn't made that impact at the NHL level. And that Kraken team, whatever was going well for them last year, hasn't been going well for them this year. I know it's early. We're not quite yet at the trade deadline, but a lot of UFAs there, Ryan, in Seattle, whether it's Jordan Eberle. Here's some other names here. Alex Wenberg, Justin Schultz, a lot of pending UFAs who who are probably going to get moved at the deadline. How soon before we start hearing those names in trade chatter?
Well, you know, the Kraken have had a pretty rough go of it of late. Wins have been very hard to come by. And again, with Edmonton rising up, all of a sudden, you know, if you're Seattle, you'll say, well, do we really have a shot at a playoff spot at this point? Or do we need to sell off some assets? I would expect we wouldn't see anything happen in Seattle until after the Winter Classic.
Okay.
Right? Because especially a guy like Jordan Eberle, who's been there since the beginning is not that impressive. In Seattle, it's only been a couple of years. But
day one-er.
He's a day one-er, as are probably, you know, two-thirds of the team. Yeah. But, you know, if you're GM Ron Francis, I think you look at this team and you say, okay, well, certain guys are going to age out anyways. You know, Eberle, I think he's 33 or about to turn 33. Venberg's a bit younger. You know, Justin Schultz is in his 30s as well. They're all UFAs, so you say, okay, well, they're perfect rentals. You know, if you're a playoff team and you can get Jordan Eberle in your top six, there's a guy with plenty of experience. You know, he could help a team, sort of in a Tyler Toffoli kind of way.
Okay.
But I would like to see Seattle continue to build. I think last year it was great for them to make the playoffs.
Unexpected in my
mind. But it was
mind.
Unexpected.
Yeah.
And then beating Colorado was unexpected. I would like to see them move some guys so that a Shane Wright has a spot that he can actually try to contribute at the NHL level this year. Because frankly, they just didn't have any room for Shane Wright. And that was why it was great that they could send him down to the AHL and Coachella Valley.
No, unfortunately, I think this is a perfect scenario for Seattle. I think the reason they have Eberle, Wenberg, and a lot of these pending UFAs was setting them up for, you know, accumulating more prospects and more picks through the draft. So when these guys were coming up, I think they, you know, the plan all along was, you know, Seattle's probably not going to be Vegas. That wasn't the blueprint that they were following.
Yeah.
I think the first 2 years or 3 years, they thought, okay, we're not going to be a playoff team. We're just going to continue to build through the draft. Yeah. So, yes, last year was unexpected. Mm-hmm. Something that isn't unexpected is Owen Beck being back for Team Canada. He is our prospect of the week. How excited are you to see him back for Team Canada?
Yeah, I think he's going to be very crucial at the World Juniors for Canada because he's going to be the only returning guy.
That's crazy. They only have one guy.
Pretty wild. And, you know, Connor Bedard and Adam Fantilli could return, but they're not going to. They're a little busy. We talked about Kevin Korchinski as well. So Owen Beck obviously is going to take on a leadership role. It's interesting because, you know, here's a Montreal Canadiens pick where usually when you draft these kids, you're thinking offense when it comes to forwards, and you're thinking about, you know, that upside. But Owen Beck has a pretty sophisticated game already. You know, he gets those details right. He's a great two-way forward. You know, it's funny, he was kind of an injury replacement last year as well.
He wasn't on the original roster.
You know, he came in kind of midway through, I believe, when Colton Dock went down, ironically, a Chicago pick. So for Beck, great opportunity to really seize the reins and, you know, sort of mentor some of the younger players. I bet Max Celebrini will take some nice lessons for him because Max Celebrini, a great two-way player as well, obviously up for the draft this year. But Owen Beck, 30 points in 25 games for the Peterborough Petes in the OHL this year. You know, we've seen him. I mean, he's actually made his NHL debut already. He got into a game with the Habs last year. So knocking on the door, but I think this would be a great experience for him to lead for Canada and see if they can win that third straight gold medal.
All right. Listen, after the break, we got Islanders team site editor Stefan Rosner coming to join us, talk about why John Tavares was booed the other night. Surprise, surprise. All that and more on the Hockey News pregame show.
We are now joined by Stefan Rosner, our New York Islanders team site editor. And Stefan, quite the game last night. John Tavares gets his 1,000th career point on Long Island. The locals, none too happy about it, as per usual. Are we surprised that the level of vitriol for their former captain is still there, or is this the least surprising thing about the Maple Leafs captain?
Yeah, this is the least surprising thing. Since he decided to go to Toronto, a lot of the Islander fan base has made him enemy number one, and it'll probably stay that way until he retires. And I don't know if he'll ever be welcome back on Long Island. I know they bring back alumni, but just given what happened, how that all transpired, whether Islander fans think it was Tavares' fault or not, that's who they blame. So anytime he's going to be on the ice, anytime he's in the building, the boos are going to rain down.
Yeah, it was funny watching Twitter react to this. And you had some people being like, how could they? This is classless. And people are expecting Lou Lamoriello to kind of get on the mic a la Greg Popovich right. and be like, come on, guys, we're not about this, and yeah. this is classy. But I'm like, I've been to MSG. They're still chanting Pot Van Sucks
sure.
any chance they get. This is not, like, unusual, especially yeah. for a New York sports market. What gives here, Stefan? Are we getting soft or something?
I just think this is the whole point of being a fan in sports, right? It doesn't have to make any kind of sense. The whole Podman sucks chant, most of the people chanting that now weren't even alive to see it happen, where it started, right? So they're just chanting it to chant it. The Tavares thing is a pretty recent bandit that the Islanders fan base had to rip off. So I think this is just the power of sports, why fans and all that kind of crazy stuff is why sports are so fun, emotional, important. And I think, yeah, I don't think they shouldn't be getting that soft. This is what sports are all about. And decisions were made. Players moved on. The team obviously has moved on as well, but the fan base is never going to forget.
Yeah. The irony of Tavares leaving Long Island and joining Toronto is that the Islanders have been pretty good since he left. I mean, they've had some decent playoff success. This is obviously a team that, as we always like to say, it's Lou Lamoriello's orchestra. You know, you're not getting necessarily a lot of individuals that are putting up huge numbers, but they always feel like a team that I would not want to play in particularly the first round of the playoffs. And this season, I think they've been a pleasant surprise. I think they're one of the hottest teams in the NHL right now, despite some pretty key injuries. What's going right for New York right now?
Yeah, right now, their offense. You know, their offense last year was firing on all cylinders earlier in the year. But then after January, which is just a horrific month, they kind of went back into Barry Trotz-style hockey, tried to shut the door and win games, and they snuck in after 82 games, needing that last game to get in. And this year, you're seeing the offense stay alive like it was with the, you know, bringing back Bo Horvat, Pierre Engvall. But this is the deepest Islanders offense we've seen in quite some time. And the most important thing is the health of Matthew Barzal. That duo with Bo Horvat has been elite this year. It's what Islander fans have been longing for. It's what Islander fans expected with these two. And right now, Barzal's got 29 points in 26 games. Bo Horvat's got 25 points in 26 games. And they're leading at the top there. The Nelson second line has always been strong. They've been strong since Engvall joined that line last year. So they're getting top six production. They're getting bottom six production. And Noah Dobson, and he's got 27 points in 27 games. And he's providing the offense, providing the defensive play, which is what he really needed to add to his game. And right now they're 8-1-2 in their last 11 games. It hasn't been a perfect 11 game stretch. They've blown a couple of leads, which has been a major issue early on this year. But right now, they're figuring out the 5-on-5 scoring. They're figuring out the power play. The penalty kill has been much better. It's just finding ways to lock down leads in the third. And you saw last night, blowing leads again became an issue, but the Islanders found a way in overtime to win. So I think they're finding this belief in themselves right now, which they didn't have early in the year, that we could beat anyone. And right now, even if the wins aren't easy wins, they're still getting the 2 points.
You mentioned Dobson. I believe he was drafted the year that the Islanders actually lost Tavares in that draft, the 2018 draft. Mm. You know, if I'm putting together a World Cup of hockey roster for Team USA,
Canada?
For Team Canada.
Yeah.
I don't know how Dobson doesn't kind of figure his way into the roster right now. We're talking about a big guy, 6'4". 200 pounds, like a big body guy who puts up that many points, that's a no-brainer for me.
He's gonna shatter probably his career highs. I mean, defensively, again, that's been people win the Norris Trophy when you just put up points. I think he's third in the league in assists, but the difference has been his defensive play. That was an area where maybe the Islanders thought, okay, how do we give this guy eight-year max deal there? He's just providing the offense. We need him to provide defense. And Lou Lamoriello, I think I asked him a couple of years ago, I said, when they gave Dobson a three-year deal, I said, what more do you have to see? And he said, you just have to see more from Dobson, an all-around game. And right now, Dobson's worked really hard in the summer to provide that defensive play, and he just looks more confident. And when he's making the plays defensively, it's turning into offense. The Islanders have three overtime wins this year. All have come right off Dobson's strong defensive play. We saw last night where he took the body on Matthews in front and disrupted him and then got the puck up, and the Islanders got the win.
Now, it's funny, you know, we've been talking about that Metropolitan Division a lot and just how wonky it's been, you know, with the exception of the Rangers, who have been at the top the whole time. Teams have been bouncing up and down, it feels like, the whole time. And it doesn't seem like that long ago, Lane Lambert was on the hot seat. What has he done to sort of, you know, I mean, obviously wins are the best medicine, but what is he? What have you seen from him behind the bench that has helped this team?
Yeah, talking with Lane in the media, he's pretty dry in terms of just what he's going to give you. But I heard from talking to all the players, he's a very emotional guy behind closed doors. And I think the Islanders certainly love that aspect of him. I think it fires him up. Every time you ask him what the thought process is going into the third on these last couple of wins and even going into overtime, he said, we're a team that believe that we could win. I think the Islanders feed off that. But he made one move back on November 28th that's really changed the course of the Islander season, and that was putting Anders Lee back on the top line. Now, Lee started the year. I didn't think he was struggling mightily. He looked like maybe age was getting to him, slowing down. He wasn't winning puck battles in corners, wasn't doing all those things. And then he started to heat up a little bit. And Lane said, you know what? Let's move him from the third line to the top line. And since then, that Islanders top line has just been absolutely dynamic, which has made it more difficult, for the opponents to decide what defense pairing goes against what forward group. The Islanders second line has been on fire as well. So that decision has really impacted the Islanders team as a whole. They're 5-1-1. Since that move, that one loss came in their first game back together where they allowed the go-ahead go to the Devils with about 2.5 seconds to play. But since then, I mean, that line has just flourished. And you could see the confidence is leaking into the power play. It's leaking into 3-on-3. So Lambert's made decisions this year that certainly haven't paid off. But the ones he's made recently, especially sticking with the lineup that he's had, he hasn't made that many changes. The fourth line, keeping Matt Martin out and leaving Hudson Fashing in there, having Julian Gaudier play on the wing of John Gabriel Pageau and Simon Holstrom. All those moves have paid off, but I think really you got to give credit to Lou. You mentioned all the injuries, Adam Pellick on long-term IR, Sebastian Aho on IR, Ryan Pulak on IR. He went and acquired Mike Riley off waivers from the Florida Panthers, and he's been incredible for the Islanders, especially in transitioning the puck with his skating ability. And then he traded a seventh round pick in 2024 for Robert Bortuzzo, who becomes the only Islander on the roster that has ever won a cup. And he brings that penalty kill prowess, that physical presence that the Islanders have been missing. So everything Lane's done has worked out recently, but you have to give credit to Lou for who he's brought in to fill some holes because they're really filling them correctly.
There you go. Well, Stefan, thanks so much for that. That was excellent. Really appreciate the time.
Ryan, you know what time it is.
It is time for the fire of Rapid.
All right, Rapid Fire. Producer Connor, I'm sure you got some questions for us. Hit us up.
I do, and we just talked about this guy. John Tavares got his 1,000th point last night. So, if he retired today, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer?
I don't think he should be. I think because he plays for the Leafs, he probably will, because the Hall of Fame committee makes some batty decisions. But he doesn't have any major awards. There is the longevity thing, and I mean, 1,000 points, very impressive, but he feels more in that like Pierre Turgeon category where you would have to wait, and even then it's sort of like Hall of Very Good.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult one. I think if he wins a Stanley Cup with the Toronto Maple Leafs and he's captaining that team, 100% he's in first ballot Hall of Famer. He's top 100 right now, Ryan, for points all time.
It is impressive.
He's going to pass Matt Sundin and Jean Beliveau.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, when you're in that kind of company, yeah, I think it's easy to get into the Hall of Fame. He's such a good guy, like you mentioned. Also, he's also incredibly healthy. So he plays another 5-6 years easily.
All right. Which city do you think is the best to be an NHLer in?
I'm going to say Los Angeles. Obviously, very nice weather, and I guess the traffic would be the only fly in the ointment, but the team's usually really good, great facilities. Obviously, you can do whatever you want in that city, you know, concerts and other sports, things like that. You can go to the beach all the time. And I would say, you can be as famous as you want in Los Angeles as a player. You know, if you're private, you're not really going to get recognized on the street, especially because they drive everywhere. But if you want to be out there, there are certainly, you know, things you can go to and people you can hang out with that would, you know, up your profile. So it feels like best of both worlds there.
Listen, if I'm in my 20s, I'm not married, Ryan. I'm going to Las Vegas, okay?
Ooh, yeah.
There is a city I want to be in. Easy flights in and out of. I could take a red eye home. Yeah. But man, oh man, you've been there.
Yep.
What a great place to see a game. No shortage of opportunities to have fun.
Totally. Yeah.
So I'm going to Vegas.
All right. You get control of the NHL for a day. Mm. What is the first thing that you change?
Yeah, this is not earth-shaking, and I'm blowing my opportunity with this, but I want to see white jerseys at home again. It's been a long time. My logic, I feel, is very sound. If you're a fan of a team, if you're a season ticket holder, why would you want to see 31 different versions of a white jersey on the away team when you could see all these beautiful sweaters in different colors in your own team's white jersey? You can flip it once in a while and see your own team's dark jersey, but it's like, that's the whole fun of jerseys, is all the different colors and this awesome canvas you have with hockey teams. I don't want to see white jerseys all the time. It's boring.
Ryan, you had all that power and you're changing the jerseys.
I know.
You know what? Maybe mine is just as silly, but I'm going, you know what? They took away the red line for so many years. Let's put it back in. Let's see what happens. You know, guys like Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, they never got to play with the red line.
Right.
Maybe we'll see more offense. Maybe we won't. So maybe this is a terrible idea.
Maybe.
Give me 10-minute overtimes and no white jerseys.
Boo.
On Saturday, Michael, you brought up Marcel Hossa. And it got me thinking about which NHLer would be had the highest chance of becoming a professional in another sport. Who in the NHL do you think has that chance?
I would go with Jacob Chychrun, because I've seen those workout videos where he's jumped 6 feet straight in the air and landed on whatever that plyometric box is. He also went to American Heritage High School, which has churned out a bunch of athletes in different sports. So I could see Jacob Chychrun as like an outside linebacker in the NFL. Like, he's got the build and he obviously has the athleticism.
It's funny because hockey players are not built like football players or baseball players. So I can't really see Connor McDavid being like, all right, throw him on the football field. And
Definitely not.
I think he'd get destroyed.
Maybe he's the place kicker.
That being said, Austin Matthews, his dad was a baseball player. I've seen Austin Matthews at the Rogers Centre in Toronto hit home runs in batting practice. So, yeah, put a bat in this guy's hand. I believe he could probably have made the majors if he didn't want hockey so bad.
All right. With Mikko Rantanen's call-out last night, what's the funniest public comment you've seen from a player to a media member?
Well, I'm going to keep it in the hockey news fraternity. Ken Campbell famously saying to Erik Karlsson, the time is nigh, about his return to Ottawa when he went to San Jose. Erik Karlsson walked off. But then Erik Karlsson embraced it soon after and used the phrase, the time is nigh, during a press conference. I think it might have been at the All-Star game, so that's fine.
I'm going real simple here. Jonathan Bernier confusing Nelson Mandela with a famous athlete, said he'd love to have played hockey with him one day, so obviously that's not going to happen. Listen, this was the Hockey News pregame show. Thank you to BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. We'll see you next time at the rink.